Living in Dublin, is it easy to live in Dublin? Would it be easier to is it easier living here than elsewhere? Might be, do you think?
More difficult and easier, but ultimately better, I think, is the point. I think that's been, for us, a very good decision, you know, and something that's paid a lot of dividends over the years that we did stay here, because we've never lost our contact to the community that we came out of, you know, whereas it would have been very easy to have moved to LA or New York or London and become part of the musical community, which is quite something that we end up involved with when we're on the road or if we're off recording somewhere else. But back in Dublin, it's actually the same community that we were always involved with, and it keeps us on a certain level, and it kind of keeps you connected to the street in a way. As bizarre as that might sound, I do feel we are still pretty connected to what's happening.
So you might do a surprise gig in the Dandelion next
week. Who knows, Dave?
Fair enough. Okay, we're going to take a break and have the news and have some sport or whatever, and then some ads and come back. No, we'll start with the ads.
Time.
Lemon is the name of the song. That's from Zeropa. We're talking to The Edge live on the programme. Edge, I mentioned something earlier on that might be a single or something. What am I saying about singles, or do I know anything, or what's going on about singles?
We still have not decided to release anything as a single to, as they say in America, to retail. So any tracks that are singles from this record, certainly in the foreseeable future, will just be tracks that we do videos for and that are serviced to radio stations as individual CDs. So they're not singles for sale as such, but they're just songs that we're trying to push forward for radio in particular. And I think that's probably going to be the next one, because we started working on a video, should be finished in a few more days.
Because you have a video for Numb. What's this thing on Tuesday in Los Angeles? What kind of a video thing is that?
I'm going over to do the Video Music Awards, the VMAs in Los Angeles, which I can't remember at what point I actually agreed to do that, but I must have been drunk, or it must be very early in the morning, because it means getting on a plane to Los Angeles a couple of days after the end of the tour, which I'm not really looking forward to. And it means me going and doing Numb on the MTV Awards, which will be very surreal, since it's a complete non-performance. So I'll just be standing there doing Numb. I don't know what it'll work out like. But we've got some video ideas. Some of the work of EBN, this Emergency Broadcast Network, their stuff. It should be pretty interesting.
So you might have been drunk at the time. What kind of thing happens on the road after the gigs? I mean, is it like constantly you got to just get into the cars and get onto the plane and get on to the next gig? Do you have time to have fun on the road, Edge, after the gig?
You have to fight for that time, Dave, but we do, yeah. You know, we try and organise our lives so that we have a day once in a while that's completely free of interviews or meetings or whatever else that we have to do as well as the shows. And we just do the usual, you know, go out, have a few pints, get a bit messy. Nothing outrageous, but we do have fun, yeah.
What about the four of you together now? I mean, like, obviously it's changed over the last 15 years, but I mean, like, what's it like? I mean, is it the four of you against the world? Are you very much, do you even become more insular, if you like, because you have to sort of stop the barrage?
Well, I know that the four members of the band are still friends in the same way that we were at the very beginning. I mean, the friendships have obviously changed and developed and gone through ups and downs along the way, but still there's the kind of level of trust that means that, you know, you've got the support of the other members, and that does help a lot. We still, you know, it's the old cliche, you go to an industry gig and you end up, you know, at the end of the night there's the four of us in some corner of the nightclub having a drink together, you know, and we still very much get on, you know. I suppose we've probably more in common with each other than most other people we're going to meet along the way, so maybe it's not that surprising.
Well, it's handy that you've never had to put an ad in the music papers and saying, like, you know, bass guitarist wanted or something, and you became, like, a working relationship with somebody, because the whole four of you started off together.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether that's luck or something that's as a result of coming out of Dublin and, you know, the sort of struggle that we had to go through to get, you know, to get up and running in the beginning. It's a very, it makes you very close to the other people that you're going through that with. But, Yeah, I also think that we do understand the value of being a band and what that means. And I think Bono said a few years ago that, you know, we may not be as good a band as, you know, some of the bands in the past, but we're probably more of a band than they were ever, in the sense that there is more respect for the other members, you know, between us. And we're under no illusions about the fact that it is the fact that we are a band of four people that have been doing this from the very beginning that is one of the most unique things about us. So it does inspire a lot of determination to keep that going, I suppose.
Does it play a lot of havoc with the private lives? Is it a very difficult thing and that people maybe don't necessarily understand?
Well, it is weird being in a street gang, which is what a rock and roll band is ultimately at 30, you know. And there's something very deeply suspicious about that, I think. But, yeah, I mean, it is hard. It's very hard. But, you know, it's hard, period, I think, nowadays, to keep your private life together. You know, it takes a lot of imagination and consideration. And I don't think it's necessarily any more difficult than it would be if you were, you know, a doctor or somebody else was working strange hours and away a lot. But sure, being on tour certainly doesn't make it any easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, but Dr. Blogs down the road is not Bono, and, you know, Midwife Blogs up the road is not The Edge, and that. So it's like, you know, you're pretty sort of famous compared to your average doctor.
Yeah, actually, it's not that really that makes the difference. I mean, I suppose there's an element of that that makes it hard, but it's actually the practical things that make it hard. It's being away. It's the amount of time that we have to spend with these other people, you know. I mean, somebody once said, I think it was Chris Blackwell, that if somebody gets married to somebody who's in a rock and roll band, they're actually getting married to the other members as well, because there's so much time spent, you know, together, that it's very hard to carve out your own separate time, you know, to be a couple, you know, because your lives are so intertwined with everyone else's. And it's, you know, it's the small things ultimately that always make the biggest difference anyway.
Mm. And so, like, if you see things in the paper and gossip columns about yourself, do you just sort of balk, or do you just say, it's just like all the other press, I don't really care about it one way or the other too much?
Yeah, I mean, the first time it's sort of, you might get upset, but to be honest, at this point in time, there's so much stuff has been written about us all that I'm certainly fairly immune to it. Mm. You know, I don't get that upset about it. I mean, there's the odd thing that kind of really pisses you off. You know, I know Bono was particularly incensed at the disclosure of the sex of his first child before he knew, you know. And that was somebody who went out of their way to find somebody in the hospital who was going to give them that information. And we found out later on, or we were told who that person was. So, Barry, if you're listening...
Bad vibes.
You know, it's really, that's when it actually, that's, I think, a point where you can quite legitimately say that it's gone too far, you know.
Well, like, down through the years, obviously the lead singer of a band is always the one who's going to get the most publicity, especially one with them out, like Bono's down for the last 15 years. So if Bono was sort of number one on that level and you'd be number two saying, I don't know what happens after that, Adam right now is up at number one, right? And whether he likes it or not, he's up there. Mm-hmm. Does he like it or not? Is it easy for him?
He seems to be coping with it very well, you know. I mean, it's... Sometimes you have to laugh or you'd cry, you know, at some of the stuff that's written. And, you know, you just have to pretty much learn to ignore it, because otherwise it would ruin your life, you know. And we kind of take the stance that what's going on outside of the inner circle is kind of out there, and it's nothing we can control. And we just really ignore it as much as we can. What's out there is out there, and what's inside is inside.
I get the impression that the most fanatical people in Europe, say, in terms of you two, would be the Italians. Would that be right?
We did
eight shows there, I remember, as well.
Yeah, we do have a lot of very loyal Italian fans, and for some reason it's probably a cultural thing. When we go to Italy, it is completely bananas. And you know, it's kind of bizarre. It's so out there, you know. But we tour Italy and we brace ourselves going in, and we enjoy it as much as we can, and it's kind of fun while you're there, but it's always sort of a relief to get back to some of the slightly more boring countries of Germany or the UK, where it's a little bit more stable.
Because, like, I mean, you were in Italy, and there was one day you hired a boat and you went off to the coast to have a swim and all the rest of it, and I was reading the Daily Mirror there one day, or one of the papers, and there was about 9 sort of Fergie toe-sucking type photographs from sort of taken from 5 miles away sort of thing, you know, the whole lot of you having a swim. I mean, that's even one day off. Like, that's how intrusive it gets.
Yeah, that was funny. We laughed. We had a good laugh at that one. That's... Italy was where it all started. You know, paparazzi is an Italian word. Again, you just can't take it too seriously.
Mm. Okay, well then, taking Zoo TV again then, I mean, or Zooropa, I should say, it was a very free way you worked, a very easy way you worked, a very loose way you worked. Is that the way you'd like to do it again, as opposed to you two are going to release a magnum opus, let's sort of, you know, gird our loins for this one, it'll be out in 12 months' time sort of thing. Do you think you might like to do it Zooropa-wise again?
I think that it's been a lesson in one way. We've discovered the benefits of doing an album quickly, and it gives the record a different feeling. You know, it's a lot less considered, I suppose. It sounds very fresh. It doesn't have that overworked feel, which you can get in your pieces sometimes if you've ironed it out to the point where there's no wrinkles, and you know, it's really a finely honed piece. Sometimes the kind of freshness that a piece put together quickly has is a very alluring and kind of attractive character, and this record has that feeling for me. It reminds me in ways of some of my favorite early records, you know, that were recorded very quickly, where because of the pressure of time and lack of you know, the sophistication that we now have in recording studios, records which were really done in a very fast and basic way, and they have a charm for that reason. And I think that I don't know whether we'd do every album like this, but I think we will in the future, you know, do records like this again.
Okay, well listen, we'll come back for our last bit. I'm going to play this break and nothing. Dirty Day is the title, that's from Zooropa. This is one of the improvisations you're saying there. What do you mean exactly now?
Well, we got in the room and started playing, and that happened. And the only thing we did to it pretty much was edit and one or two overdubs, and then lyric and vocal. We probably spent a total of about 6 hours on the recording and probably about 4 hours on the mixing.
When you say we, I mean, who? Most people say Bono's the lyrics, Edge's the music. Is that fair enough?
Well, actually, I wrote this lyric with Bono.
Right.
One of it's the only collaboration on the record, and then Numb's, I wrote the lyrics to that. The music really is our composition, the four of us, in the sense that we all just were in the room when it happened. Brian obviously was there as well, and he contributes keyboards. Some of the guitar sounds on this sound like keyboards, so it's a little hard to define which is which. And then the team, you know, the engineering production team of Flood, Robbie Adams, Willie Mannion, and Brian and myself kind of worried it to the finishing line.
What's this scene with this
and
new
deal? As well, actually.
All right, so this new deal that you've got, I mean, like, is this thing that, like, the company that you've now signed this big deal with, it's got a great software side to it, and there's, like, in other words, the possibilities for exploration in terms of technology, etc., are just endless. Maybe Zoo TV is just the start of something, certainly for your head, maybe.
Well, we're talking about taking it into pure television. That's a possibility. Not that we'd be involved directly in that, necessarily. But, you know, I mean, I'm interested in other software possibilities, you know, be they video games or interactive CDs or whatever, virtual realities, whatever. But I actually am fairly skeptical at the moment, based on what I've seen, that there's as yet an opportunity for us to get involved in these new formats, because a lot of them seem to take what currently is available and just expand their the potential to carry information. So CD, now you can get visuals on your CD. You can also access different mixes on your CD. But all that stuff has to be obviously programmed and edited and put together for the product. And I just don't know. I mean, it takes us so long to get an album together. I just can't imagine that we're going to work on 10 mixes of each song and, you know, different video elements to go in that package. I just think it's too much work for anybody, and I'm still fairly skeptical at the moment. I mean, we're talking to a lot of people, but really it's just talk at the moment.
Do you think in any way that like Even Better Than the Real Thing or something from Octong Baby, that a song like that, that with the different mixes that you did, that it might have actually opened up a whole new audience to you too, in terms of sort of a younger dance audience or whatever?
Well, that was the intention, was to try and get something that made sense in clubs, you know. And we've always had an interest in the dance movement, in dance culture, but we're, you know, we don't make dance music. We've never tried to, and I don't think we would be that interested in making music specifically for clubs. So bringing in people like Paul Oakenfold or Dave Morales or DJ Muggs, you know, to do remixes of your songs seems to us just a kind of easy and effective way of getting some of your music into the clubs. They are reworkings, and we view them as kind of not necessarily representing us creatively. You know, they are other people's work on top of our basic track. So you know, we're almost as in that sense, we're willing to give these remix artists the leeway to do what they want to do, and unless we really hate something, you know, we're kind of happy to let them put it together and put it out.
So when you mentioned virtual reality earlier on, when you mentioned interactive, etc., does that mean that if you two release an album in 1988, I could be playing guitar with the Edge on it?
Well, that technology exists to do that. There's probably about 50 people in the world who have the necessary hardware to play back something like that, like a CDI player, or there's a new Sega system which does pretty much the same thing. I mean, there's at this point in time, there's probably a dozen different hardware manufacturers, and they're all vying to capture the big interactive market, which is supposedly just around the corner. The point is, who is going to make the work for this new format? Because ultimately, it's just a different way of, you know, presenting work. The point is that we need the work first, you know. And I'm just not convinced yet that what people are suggesting to put out on these new formats is ultimately that interesting. And I think that before it's actually going to take off, it needs creative people to be given the opportunity to play around with the new formats to find out what it's good at doing. And we got pretty excited about working with EBN in particular, because it was the first time I really saw how something, a piece, could be a fully integrated audio-visual entity. And I suppose the remix, the video remix of Numb, which was on the video version of the video single of Numb, was our first venture into that area. And you know, that's actually quite simple use of technology. It's just moving pictures and sound. There's no interactivity in that, but I think that's ultimately a lot more interesting than some of the things that people are suggesting at the moment to do with this new hardware.
It's a long way from the Baggot Age.
It is.
Okay, well then, this show, Zoo TV, which Dublin people have yet to see, and they'll see it tomorrow and Saturday. In fact, loads of people from all over Ireland and all over the world will obviously be at these gigs. The Saturday one, first of all, is the one that's going to be heard by the biggest single audience potentially for any programme in the history of radio, whatever. Does that make any difference to you guys at all? I mean, it's a bit odd. It's going to be on radio all over America. It's going to be on radio all over the world or whatever. But, I mean, it's a visual show, you know. They're going to miss out a little bit, aren't they?
Yeah, I was just thinking that the other day. What are we going to do when Bono's skipping through the video channels? It's going to sound pretty strange. Maybe we'll have a commentator. And now he's found CNN, and we have, you know. I don't know quite what we're going to do, but you're right, it is a very visual show, and there's a few little wrinkles we have to iron out between now and, is it Saturday night?
Yeah. Well, tomorrow's the first one. But no, it's just that, like, the funny thing is that, what do you call it, at the end of the show, or like before the encore, it's about sort of 7 or 8 minutes, it's quite a long time, where you have this video confessional. Explain that to the people who might be going tomorrow on Saturday and what they can do to sort of star in front of the home crowd.
The video confessional is almost self-explanatory in that it's a means for people in the audience to go and air their views, their confessions, their darkest secrets, in front of the whole audience. And what happens is that there's a small booth. In fact, it's a portaloo that's been commandeered and redesigned for videoing these confessions. And what happens is during the afternoon, people go in, they have their say, and during the intermission between support acts, one of our video crew edit together the most interesting confessions, and it gets replayed then at the end of the show between the main body of the set and the encore section. And you know, you can get, most of them are quite funny, but you occasionally get people trying to make serious points. It's completely up to the audience what goes out, and it's always very interesting to see what people want to say on a given night in a given town.
Joe Hurley used it the other day to say hello to his mother up in the stands.
Yeah, the crew have a bit of an unfair advantage because
they have access all areas.
They have access, yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's as you can imagine, during the course of the tour, there's a lot of road crew in jokes that end up on the video confessionals, and I suppose Joe was making use of the fact that he was in his hometown, and you know.
Well, I'm going to be doing that bit for radio stations all over America on Saturday night, and I know what's going to happen during
that.
I know what's going to happen during those 7 minutes for America.
Ads. Well, you could tell me later.
Yeah, all the ads they didn't play in the previous 2 hours of the gig, they're going to stick them all together, 7 minutes of ads. So it's going to be really interesting for the people
at
home in America.
Very appropriate.
Yeah, they sort of missed the old confessional box, that's for sure. The thing about the show itself being the show by which all others must be measured, is that true, or is that just, wait a minute, this is just U2 in 1993? It's not as though Bruce Springsteen or Bon Jovi have to go following U2 and make bigger screens.
I don't really know. I mean, I've seen that written, but I mean, it's just, you know, that particular journalist's opinion. I mean, I think it's certainly for us, it's the probably the most, unusual way that we've attempted to play. I think trying to be objective about it, I think it's one of the most successful stadium tours, in the sense that it's one of the only tours that's tried to acknowledge the true nature of stadiums and the difficulty of projecting a four-piece rock and roll band's performance across to that number of people. But I don't know. I mean, it's really, I don't really want to be put in the position of having to critique our own show or make any pronouncements about it. I just, for us, it's we're very proud of it, and we're very pleased with the way it's turned out, but who knows, you know, next year somebody might be doing something that makes it look very low-tech.
Is there one aspect of the catwalk that goes right down into the middle of the audience, which you use in the middle of the gig to do, like, Angel of Harlem or Satellite of Love or whatever, is there a bit to that to say, look, let's just humanise this for a few minutes in case you've been bombarded too much by the images in front of the screen, in front of the stage, on the stage?
Yeah, there's a bit of that. I mean, the way that any performance works is utilizing contrast, and in that instance, the fact that we can walk away from the main stage with all the production value of the screens and all that, and walk out and just do a few songs in the center of the audience, it does make a very stark contrast, and it creates, by virtue of that contrast, an incredibly kind of intimate feeling and a kind of closeness which I don't think would exist, for instance, if we did the whole show in the middle of the stadium. Similarly, I think we're using the contrast of the irony of some of the show to underscore those moments when we play some of the old songs, the kind of the soul and the kind of the way a song without any video presentation can really be a very powerful thing. I'm thinking, for instance, Pride in the Name of Love, where that song just, you know, it is made even more powerful because of the nature of the first hour and whatever of the show that precedes it.
Do you think in any way, if you go back, that like what you two are doing now is the opposite to what like a lot of people do? I mean, like, take Al Green or something, who was a wild man and rock and roll and soul music and the works, and then he sort of found God, became a preacher and everything else. In one way, you've done it the other way around. I mean, you were sort of like supposedly the Bible band, or you found God very early on, and you were with God, or you were doing this on albums and references to biblical things all over the place, etc. And now it's, hey, rock and roll.
Yeah, I've been asked that one a few times recently. I don't feel like we're actually doing that much different. It's just that we're presenting it in a very different way. In this case, you know, we've learnt that sometimes saying the exact opposite of what you want to say or what you mean can get your message across in a much more powerful way. So hence the character of Mephisto. You know, I mean, Bono has not become the devil, but for that moment in the show, he takes on that character, you know. So it's just a question of the way you're presenting your songs and your ideas. That's the difference. And I think actually, as it happens, the subject matter and the intention of the band is pretty much the same as it's always been. It's funny how the surface seems to really be what people latch onto, what people judge what you're doing by. And, okay, we are, I think, a lot looser than we probably were before, but I don't think it's all that different, really, to where we were on the Joshua Tree tour in terms of what we're trying to do. It's like the manner in which we're doing it is the real difference.
When you play Satellite of Love, you have Lou Reed up on the video screen singing along with it. How does that always work? I mean, like, why isn't there some mistiming going on there? Or am I being very naive in terms of the technology?
Because we're clever bastards.
Clever bastards.
You know? We don't really want to know about that, but it's we've been kind of lucky as well. It's never gone wrong.
Right. Okay, now, Zoo TV in the US, if there was a theme or whatever, or a thread in any way, it was the elections. Is it fair to say that in difference to Zoo TV in Europe, in other words, Europa, it's turmoil or whatever?
Yeah, well, Zoo TV, one of the central ideas was that we would always try and utilize what was happening, you know, what was current, what was in the air. Sometimes that was just drawing down the broadcasts that other people were sending out on the night, live tuning into satellite stations and what they were churning out. But also, I suppose, we recognized that there was a potential to make some real points and to connect with some real issues along the way. And this summer in Europe, the obvious issues were what was going on in Yugoslavia, which in some ways, to a less dramatic extent, is being mirrored across the whole of Europe. The rise of xenophobia in Germany, the sort of rise of ultra-nationalistic political movements in Spain and the UK, movements in Italy to divide Italy into three different zones. And just the general uncertainty about Europe, you know, where we're headed. Are we kind of on the road to a glorious new future or ruin? And, you know, the end of national and cultural identity and, you know, all those issues, they end up all wrapped around one another. And just the general uncertainty of this time, you know, we felt it was a very uncertain moment in time for ourselves as musicians and part of the rock and roll business. You know, no one seems to fully know where that's headed, and also just generally in Europe. And we started to see that uncertainty could either be a cause of a lot of depression and negative kind of feelings, or you could see it as the chance to start again, you know, the end of complacency, the beginning of a set of new ideas. And I suppose that's where we're tuning into is, you know, we're very interested in the future, because I think we are at a crossroads, and I think there's a lot of things that are up for grabs, probably in a way that they haven't been for 50 years.
Mm. Okay, well, Edge, finally, the phone calls over the weekend, you obviously never say beforehand, you probably don't even know yet at this stage, do you, who you're going to be ringing on the stage in terms of Mr. Mephisto himself?
No, we actually don't know yet.
Right.
We tend to make that decision on the day, you know, it's, and sometimes minutes before we go on stage.
Mm.
It's something that you have to, you know, you're drawing on, in some ways, the prejudices or partisan feelings of the audience. You know, you're becoming a kind of foil for the audience's feelings. And, you know, on the day we'll decide, but I don't have a clue yet. If anyone has Bishop Casey's phone number out there, though, if they could ring Dave Fanning.
No problem. okay, well, just this thing, you have a 6-album deal or something, it's said in a lot of news reports. Could that possibly be that you wouldn't have to do one new song and still release 4 albums? I mean, in that you could... Okay, there was live stuff on Rattle and Hum, but there's still live stuff to go from, say, Unforgettable Fire, like in other words, post Under a Blood Red Sky. So you've got, you know, Unforgettable Fire, you've got Joshua Tree, you've got some Rattle and Hum studio tracks, you've got Octung Baby, and you've got Zeropa. So you could bring out a live album, or a double live album, or 2 live albums. And then you bring out a Best of U2, and then Best of U2 Volume 2. You bring out Unplugged U2. Do you know what I mean? You could be the Dalton Brothers again. In other words, like, you could have 4 or 5 albums before you release one new song.
That would never fly, Dave. The record company aren't that stupid.
They have about that. I mean, are you trying to tell me that U2 Volume 1 Greatest Hits and U2 Volume 2 Greatest Hits wouldn't sell in billions to people who sort of say, yeah, I wouldn't mind all these together. I only bought one of the albums, I didn't buy them all.
I don't know.
I do.
Certainly it's not something we're interested in at the moment, you know.
Right.
So, we're too excited about recording new songs to be worried about compilations this stage. Right.
Okay, well, listen, Edge, the very best of luck on stage tomorrow. Yeah, listen, this thing about tomorrow and the next day in Dublin, does it really make that much difference to you? I mean, it's the same stage that you've had all around the world. It's the same piece of ground that you'll be swaying away and wielding your mean axe, etc. And Larry will be banging the drums in the same little podium, etc. So does it really make a difference that you're at home in Dublin? Or is it just, you know, if it's Friday, it must be Dublin?
Now we all get a bit misty-eyed there, Dave, at the thought of hitting the stage in the old sod. It's actually just we're terrified of fucking up in front of all the aunties and uncles is the truth. That's the main difference.
Huge guest list, yeah.
Oh.
Well, the most important question of the night, obviously, Edge, with all of this, is any free tickets for the gig? All right, listen, Edge, thanks for dropping in, and good luck with the last 2 days, and then the rest of the world, Japan and Australia. You'll be home for Christmas, will you?
That's what I'm told. I believe it when we get there.
All right, thanks very much, Edge. Take it easy, and enjoy yourself on the road, etc. Now, which button do I press here? Well, this is my first time in the studio, by the way. Are you impressed so far?
You're doing very well.
Okay, I'll press the green one, will I? Okay, let's see what happens. Thanks, Edge.